NCAA leagues back huge settlement, setting stage for dramatic change across college sports. The NCAA and the nation's five biggest conferences said Thursday night they have agreed to pay nearly $2.8 billion to settle a host of antitrust claims, a monumental decision that sets the stage for a groundbreaking revenue-sharing model that could start directing millions of dollars directly to athletes as soon as the 2025 fall semester. NCAA President Charlie Baker, along with the commissioners of the Atlantic Coast Conference, Big Ten, Big 12, Pacific 12, and Southeastern Conference, released a joint statement Thursday night announcing they had agreed to settlement terms. They called the move an important step in the continuing reform of college sports that will provide benefits to student athletes and provide clarity in college athletics across all divisions for years to come. The deal still must be approved by the federal judge overseeing the case, and challenges could arise, but if the agreement stands, it will mark the beginning of a new era in college sports where athletes are compensated more like professionals and schools can compete for talent using direct payments. There's no question about it. It's a huge quantum leap, said Tom McMillan, the former Maryland basketball standout and congressman who has led an association of collegiate athletic directors the past 8 years. The details in the plan signal the end of the NCAA's bedrock amateurism model that dates to its founding in 1906. Indeed, the days of NCAA punishments for athletes driving booster-provided cars started vanishing 3 years ago, when the organization lifted restrictions on endorsement deals backed by so-called name, image, and likeness money. Now it is not far-fetched to look ahead to seasons where a star quarterback or top player on a college basketball team is not only cashing in big money nil deals, but also has a $100,000 school payment in the bank. There are a host of details still to be determined, but the agreement calls for the NCAA and the conferences to pay $2.77 billion over 10 years to more than 14,000 former and current college athletes who say now-defunct rules prevented them from earning money from endorsement and sponsorship deals dating to 2016. Even though it was only because of the overwhelming legal pressure, the NCAA, conferences, and schools are agreeing that college athletes should be paid, said Ramogi Huma, a former UCLA football player and longtime advocate for college athletes. And there's no going back from there. That's truly groundbreaking. Some of the money will come from NCAA reserve funds and insurance, but even though the lawsuit specifically targeted five conferences that are comprised of 69 schools, as well as largely independent Notre Dame, dozens of other NCAA member schools will see smaller distributions from the NCAA to cover the mammoth payout. Schools in the Big Ten, Big 12, Atlantic Coast, and Southeastern conferences will end up bearing the brunt of the settlement at a cost of about $300 million each over 10 years, the majority of which will be paid to athletes going forward. The Pac-12 is also part of the settlement, with all 12 members sharing responsibility, even though Washington State and Oregon State will be the only league members left by this fall after the other 10 schools leave for other conferences. In the new compensation model, each school will be permitted, but not required, to set aside up to $21 million per year in revenue to share with athletes, though as revenues rise, so could the cap. Athletes in all sports would be eligible for payments, and schools would be given the freedom to decide how that money is divvied up among sports programs. Scholarship limits by sport will be replaced by roster restrictions. Whether the new compensation model is subject to the Title IX gender equity law is unknown, along with whether schools will be able to bring nil activities in-house as they hope, and thus squeeze out the booster-run collectives that have sprouted up in the past few years to pay athletes. Both topics could lead to more lawsuits. The class-action federal lawsuit at the center of the settlement, House v. the NCAA, was set to go to trial in January. The complaint, brought by former Arizona State swimmer Grant House and Sedona Prince, a former Oregon and current Texas Christian basketball player, said the NCAA, along with the five wealthiest conferences, improperly barred athletes from earning endorsement money. The suit also made the case that athletes were entitled to a portion of the billions of dollars the NCAA and those conferences earn from media rights agreements with television networks. amid political and public pressure, and facing the prospect of another court loss that some in college sports claimed could reach $20 billion in damages, NCAA and conference officials conceded on what has long been a core principle of the enterprise, that schools don't directly pay the athletes to play beyond a scholarship. That principle had already been dented numerous times over the past decade. Notably, the Supreme Court unanimously ruled against the NCAA in 2021 in a case related to education-related benefits. The narrow focus of the Alston case didn't collapse the collegiate sports system, but the strong rebuke of the NCAA's model of amateurism flung the door open to more lawsuits. Justice Brett Kavanaugh, a former Yale athlete, put it bluntly, "The bottom line is that the NCAA and its member colleges are suppressing the pay of student athletes who collectively generate billions of dollars in revenues for colleges every year." The settlement is expected to cover two other antitrust cases facing the NCAA and major conferences that challenge athlete compensation rules. Hubbard v. the NCAA and Carter v. the NCAA are also currently in front of judges in the Northern District of California. A fourth case, Fontenot v. NCAA, creates a potential complication as it remains in a Colorado court after a judge denied a request to combine it with Carter. Whether Fontenot becomes part of the settlement is unknown, and it matters because the NCAA and its conferences don't want to be on the hook for more damages should they lose in court. We're going to continue to litigate our case in Colorado and look forward to hearing about the terms of a settlement proposal once they're actually released and put in front of a court, said George Zelks, a plaintiff's attorney in Fontenot. The solution agreed to in the settlement is landmark, but not surprising. College sports have been trending in this direction for years, with athletes receiving more and more monetary benefits and rights they say were long overdue. In December, Mr. Baker, the former Massachusetts governor who has been NCAA president for 14 months, proposed creating a new tier of Division I athletics where the schools with the most resources would be required to pay at least half their athletes $30,000 per year. That suggestion, along with many other possibilities, remains under discussion. The settlement does not make every issue facing college sports go away. There is still a question of whether athletes should be deemed employees of their schools, something Mr. Baker and other college sports leaders are fighting against. Some type of federal legislation or antitrust exemption is likely still needed to codify the terms of the settlement, protect the NCAA from future litigation, and preempt state laws that attempt to neuter the organization's authority. As it is, the NCAA is still facing lawsuits that challenge its ability to govern itself, including setting rules limiting multiple time transfers. Federal lawmakers have indicated they would like to get something done, but while several bills have been introduced, none have gone anywhere. Despite the unanswered questions, one thing is clear. Major college sports are about to become more like professional sports than ever before. By Ralph D. Russo.